Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking. Now, this episode is a bit different in a number of ways. First up, it's available as video. This is the first time that we've done this, so head over to YouTube, search for Downtime Podcast and you'll find us there. Subscribe to the channel and you'll be the first to see all of the videos that will be coming out in the near future. Secondly, a lot of you have been asking to hear from some of the brands, the events and the venues that make this sport what it is. So this is the first episode where we're featuring a brand. Thirdly, and finally, as many of you know, I quit my day job at the end of 2017 to spend more time being involved with what I love, and that's bikes. Unfortunately, that means I'm not earning very much money right now. And the podcast takes up some of my time, but I love it, so that's no problem. But it does cost me a little bit of money, and I need to try and find a way to cover that. So I'm going to be looking at putting some sponsorship on the podcast and also having sponsored episodes where the brands appearing will pay to come on the podcast. So this is the first of those. I'm going to be very selective. I only want brands that I think will be interesting, have a good story to tell, and that you guys will want to listen to, and also who make products that I'd be more than happy to use or to ride myself. This is the first of our sponsored podcasts. So for this episode of Many Firsts, we're joined by Si Turner of Cotic Bikes. I've known Si for a long time and always been super impressed at his engineering ability. He's able to really understand how things work from a fundamental level and use that understanding to make things better. So we sat down to talk about long, low and slack, his journey to the latest bike geometry and why it works. As usual, don't forget to follow us on social media. Just look for Downtime Podcast on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcast app and you can join our newsletter all via the subscribe page over on our website, downtimepodcast.com. Okay, without further ado, here's the episode of Many Firsts with Si Turner of Cotic Bikes. Si Turner, welcome to Downtime. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So, long, low, slack. Lots of talk about it in the industry at the moment. Forums are buzzing with it. We're here to have a chat, find out a bit about your views on long, low and slack, help people understand it a little bit more. We've got one of your bikes here as well so that we can talk through some of the characteristics and some of the dimensions we're talking about. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about your journey into long, low and slack.
Okay, so our bikes have always had a reasonable amount of space anyway, but we've always designed them around the kind of like the full sus bikes were always designed around like the sort of 50-60 mil stem kind of region.
Yeah.
Like for instance, you know, Paul would ride a small with a 50 mil stem. I used to ride a large with a 60 mil stem. Uh-huh. And our hardtails were designed for something a touch longer, sort of 60-70 mil. But that was the kind of thing, because that was short stems 5-6 years ago kind of thing. Gave us good handling, is what we thought. So they were never crazy short or crazy steep.
Yeah.
Like the first Rocket came out in 2012, and if you put a 160 fork on it, the head angle was like 65 and a half degrees. So which is pretty, you know, pretty progressive for the time, but so they've never been like funny shaped in the way that some other, you know, sort of bikes have been over the last sort of 5-6 years.
Yeah.
But so a couple of things happened. First thing was I've been following with interest what Chris Porter had been doing at Geometron a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And the catalyst for that was he came up and did a tech talk for A-Line Coaching, came up to Sheffield, had a chat about why he was doing what he was doing, and he brought one of his bikes. He bought one of the Geometrons from a couple of years ago. And I know Chris reasonably well, so we had a bit of a chat afterwards. And I had to jump on the bike, and this was literally a spin round a tarmac car park in the dark. But the thing was, is that it felt like a bike. And this is the thing. I think I've been doing this for a while, and you know the designing bikes thing. So I think sometimes you get a little bit. Sometimes you're worried to fail, or you sort of get maybe a little bit sort of comfortable with, you know, my bikes work well, and I'm quite happy with how I understand how this works.
If
and
I can't broke, don't fix it.
Kind of thing. I mean, I was all, you know, like, you know, for, you know, we were always doing little things that we saw as improvements.
Yeah.
But you know, like the 275 bikes were about 12 mil longer than the 26 bikes when they came out, just to give that little, you know, because people were tending to put slightly shorter stems on it. So anyway, so that was one of the, so I had a quick spin on the Geometron, and one of the big things Chris said was that it was all about, it wasn't about massive reach necessarily, you know, like loads of space. It was about this little short stem, which gave this great handling, which I thought was interesting because I'd never thought about it in that kind of context.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, and it was a complete throwaway comment that I think you actually sent me a message about.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Greg Minar was interviewed on, really long interview on Pink Bike around the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking about the Honda days. Yeah. And there was, he was saying about how Honda said that, like, it was all about getting, from their motorbike experience, it was all about getting the handlebars behind the fork offset, you know, behind the front wheel axle.
Yeah.
And obviously, we, you know, even on 29er forks, like, you know, you're just in the game on a 51 offset with a 50 mil stem, but, you know, I was running 42 mil offset forks with a 60 mil stem kind of thing, you know, so it's like quite a difference from what they were talking
about. So just
about.
Explain fork offset then for people that don't know that.
Okay, so fork offset is part of the steering geometry. It's one of the things that gives you the feel on the bike. So the thing that actually, one of the main things that gives you like the feel through the bars is something called trail.
Right.
So if you drop if you're looking at the bike sideways and you drop a line straight down from the axle to the floor, so the contact patch, and then you draw a line along the floor, away from the, you know, away from the bike, where a line through the center of the head tube comes down, and hits the floor, that distance along the floor is called the trail.
Okay.
And the more trail you have, the more you know, it changes the feel of the bike. The more trail you have, the heavier the steering is, because you've got more moment arm between the steering axis and the contact patch. And you reduce the trail by increasing the fork offset, the offset. Right. So when you see these forks, like, you know, people are talking about fork offsets again now as well, because some people are shortening them, and that in previously with 29ers came along, they got long to try and reduce the trail again because of the bigger wheels. So it's all bound
moving.
Up in
that.
I can probably send you a link to like a couple of articles that you can like, so
we can add in.
Anyway, so fork offset on mountain bikes since once 27 and a half inch wheels came along is somewhere between 42 and 51 mil.
Okay.
So most forks these days for 27 and a half inch wheels are around 44, 46 mil offset.
Yeah.
Some 29, a lot of 29er forks are 51 mil offset. So, so that's where your offset is.
Yeah.
So if you've got a stem that's like, you know, 50, 60, 70 mil long, your handlebars are in front of your steering axis. Mm-hmm. So once you actually get into thinking about this, well, that's one of the things that almost regardless of how slack your bike is, that's going to be one of the things that ultimately is going to give you that tuck, that you go too hard and it comes out from underneath you. Your outside arm comes over the top.
Yeah.
Because where you're putting the load in is in front of the contact patch and it's in front of the front axle.
Okay.
So at some point because you've got a moment arm across that distance, you're going to be able to overcome that. Yeah. It's an extreme situation, but it will happen.
Front wheel,
yeah, you'll tuck the front wheel. Whereas if you get that stem behind the forks, so we're talking, I designed the bike around, initially I got the shortest stem I could. I got like a 31 mil stem, but they're basically designed around a 35 mil length stem. So the idea was take a bike. So I drew up a bike in November 2015, which was based on completely stock production rocket, large. And I made the longest bike I could with the Reynolds down tubes that were available.
Right.
In fact, it was even longer than that because I think at the time they were only making 740 down tubes.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you just leave it on the machine, how long will you get? I think we ended up like 758 or something that. They just ran it right off the end of the machine. And I was doing a little bit of work with Shand cycles at the time. So I said, you know, if I supply you a tube set, can you make me a front end? And as it happened, they were a little bit light going into that December. So they, I think I delivered them the drawing on the 4th of December and it turned up on the 20th.
Nice.
It was like...
It's a good Christmas
present. Cool. Yeah. So basically that bike was the longest bike I could make.
Yeah.
Based, and I tweaked the head angle so that with an angle, with a 1 degree angle set in backwards, it had the same head angle as the current bike.
Okay.
So the only thing I changed was the length of the bike.
Yeah.
There was a setup where all of this is the same apart from the length of the bike and the fact that I've got this tiny stem on it. Now, at the time, I was riding production large with a 60 mil stem. So even with the tiny stem on it, I'd given myself something like 50 mil more space.
Yeah, so a big change.
Yeah, so given that most size jumps are between like 17 and 25 mil per size, you know, even being generous, I'd effectively made the bike two sizes longer. And I went and did the first ride. I rattle canned it in horrible white outside my garage. And
stealth.
And built up a back end onto it and built up the bike. And I went up to one of our local I just did my local ride, my local like 2 hour loop. And the climbing was fine. And it was actually really nice because actually I could slide my saddle a bit further forward because I had all of this space. So actually I was a little bit more in the middle of the bike.
Yeah.
So that was quite, that was first kind of, oh, yeah, this is comfortable and I've got a bit more space. And then one of I went and rode Blue Steel, which is the crowdfunded trail up in, up at Lady Canning's in Sheffield.
Fantastic
trail. And it's like a bobsleigh, right? It's like it's a blue flow trail, but loads of berms. And it's like the faster you go, the harder it is. It's just brilliantly built in that respect. And I've never been the best berm rider.
Right.
So I was getting better because I now had this trail on my local loop. But I just remember riding down this trail and it was properly one of those light bulb moments. Because despite the fact that the bike was much longer than I was normally riding, and they're quite tight berms, I was riding it with way more confidence. And it was all down to the fact that it felt like my hands were pressing through the contact patch.
Interesting.
I just was shoving the front end into these corners. And there was such a feeling of security. You know, like I said, I never got that feeling that the bike was doing, I was fighting the bike doing this. You just shoved the front end in and it just stayed there. And I thought, and it was so confidence inspiring. And I thought, this is interesting. Uh-huh. So, yeah, so that bike was 507 mil reach.
Right.
So that's just a touch shorter than what the new Longshot XLs are.
Right.
Because
okay.
Reynolds have actually started making longer down tubes.
Nice.
So yes, that was the start of the story really.
Yeah.
And it was all down to the, and at that point I hadn't even made it lower or slacker.
No.
All I'd done was made it longer.
And the length was purely to kind of compensate for the shorter stem.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'd given myself more space because I was potentially riding a bike that was a little bit on the small side for me.
Right.
But that was also that kind of old school thinking that was sort of playing on my mind. Is I always want, even as a tall guy, XL frames used to be like gates. I always rode a large with a slightly longer stem to get, so I could chuck it around. It was that kind of short kind of chuck it around kind of idea, but that's quite old thinking now really. So so like I say, this bike was, I had loads more room, felt really comfortable. I had this incredible feeling, but like I say, head angle was exactly the same. BB was exactly the same. Rear end was exactly the same. In fact, you know, people have said about the previous generation Rocket bikes is that the BB was like really quite on the high side for what it was. I mean, it was a 350 BB. It's only minus five.
Yeah.
It's not a lot for compared to where a lot of these bikes are these days.
Right.
So it wasn't really about that to start with. It was to start with, it was just reducing the variables.
Yeah. So in your opinion then, we're not, bikes getting longer is not necessarily what's making the difference. The shorter stem to match or to come underneath the fork offset is what's driving
that's
the improved handling.
That's the key.
And you kind of have to, I guess you have to go longer to keep the person in the right place on the bike with the short stem, right?
Exactly that. So there's a couple of other things going on, and this is where I started. But what it did was, is that it really opened my mind. It got me challenging all of my preconceptions.
Right.
Like it got me making me look at the whole bike as a system again and say, right, well, how does this all work together?
Yeah.
Like I said, I'd always thought I liked reasonably slack, not like mega slack, but like reasonably relaxed seat angles, because I'd come from bikes which were possibly a bit too small for me. And back in the day, you always had a layback seat post on your bike.
Yeah.
It was just what I was used to, and it gave me the length in the bike. But obviously now with inline seat posts, because that's what most droppers are, that sort of takes a bit of space away.
Yeah.
And we did compensate that for that a little bit in the previous generation geometry. But actually what I realized is it's when you've got all the room in front of you and you can tip it forward a bit, actually that plants you in the middle of the bike. And that's good. So I just started knocking over some of this baggage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause it does happen, you know, you've been doing this for 12 years and you've actually been reasonably successful at designing bikes and got some really good feedback on your product. You think, oh, I've got a system that works here. You know,
kind of thing. It's hard to look beyond that and see the change, right?
Yeah, definitely. So that bike then morphed into one of the options I had because of the way the rear end was built on that bike is that I could put the prototype 29er rear end onto it.
Right.
So I could go from a 435 rear end to a 450 rear end.
Okay.
So I can try out how does that change things.
Yeah.
I could cycle through head angle changes. Mm-hmm. So in the spirit of this challenging my preconceptions, the next thing I did, so obviously that first bike was completely standard, just longer.
Yeah.
Then I went full Geometron.
Right.
So I stuck the 29er back end on it. I put a 2-degree angle set in it. So I think the head angle ended up in the, I think I measured it at 63.1.
Right.
So something like slack. That. So pretty slack.
Yeah.
And obviously much longer wheelbase. And you felt so in the middle of the bike. It felt so planted. But the interesting thing was that the ride I actually did with that was with Che and Swinney on the who are my team riders.
Yeah.
And we went and rode at Mac Forest round Che's Way, and there's some disgustingly steep, slippy, loamy kind of downhill like stuff. And you think, well, this is where this is going to be mega.
Yeah, super stable.
Super stable, loads of confidence in the front end. But it didn't work.
Right.
It was too much for me.
Okay.
Because obviously this is all about, I try not to be too dogmatic about things. This is my opinion on bike design.
Yeah,
I know Chris goes even longer, and I know some people want slightly shorter and steeper because they like a certain level of interaction with their bikes. I'm not saying right and wrong. I'm just explaining to you what my experience was. So you're going down these super steep, and you want that feeling of the front end pinning in. But the problem was that it was so slack and it was so far away that I couldn't get enough weight on the front wheel.
Right.
So it wasn't tucking.
Yeah.
So I wasn't falling off, but it was understeering. It was just pushing. So there was no. So I didn't fall off all day, but I didn't actually get the bike going where I wanted it to for most of it either.
Right.
So.
because you're too stretched out, it was way too far.
And on steep terrain, I gave it another couple of rides to see whether I could change my riding style, because it felt like if you could commit more load to it,
yeah,
it would take it. But I just couldn't. It didn't feel. It felt too challenging to my riding style.
Yeah.
You know, I'm willing to have a go. You know, I've had coaching over the last like 2 or 3 years to try and improve my riding style and try and improve the way I do things.
Yeah.
But I do think it also has to come back to how it's got to feel. It's got to feel vaguely connected to what you're used to doing. It's got to feel slightly intuitive. Otherwise, it's going to take so long to learn how to ride, relearn how to ride the bike. Yeah. You're just going to get bored.
And a lot of people are not going to be willing to put that
exactly,
time in.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So to me, it wasn't, I couldn't commit on steep terrain. I couldn't get my weight far enough forward to feel comfortable to make it work.
Okay.
So now we've got to, right, okay, so that's too much.
Yeah.
So now you start bringing it back in. And a couple of months later, we did a test day at Revolution Bike Park with the team, because Swinney had just joined the team. We just got the bikes together, mm-hmm, and we thought, let's do a test day. So we went to Revolution in February in the snow and ice. And I was really scared of Revolution.
Yeah, no way. It's a fun place to ride, right?
But JP from A-Line said, no, come, it'll be fine. You know, it's not all massive jumps. There's some technical stuff. You'll love it. So anyway, I was riding this bike. And by this point, I was back on regular rear end. Mm-hmm. And I just got a straight headset in it. So 64.5 degree head angle. And it just felt amazing. In the steep technical terrain, I could just stuff it straight into these corners, straight down these drops. And it just felt amazing.
And
it was all about confidence. It was confidence inspiring. It made me a better rider because it made me less scared.
Perfect.
It's like that was the key for me.
Yeah.
That was the key. That was the point at which I thought, right, we've got to start looking at this for everything. Because this isn't about people riding at Mach 3 with their hair on fire. It allows amazing riders to do that, but that's because it's confidence inspiring, and that's not just for aggressive riders or incredible riders. That's actually brilliant for everyone. So that was like my real, like, I'd had a couple of light bulb moments with this, obviously, as I've said, but that was the point at which I thought, right, I've got to now look at researching this for all of the bikes.
Yeah.
This isn't just for full-on enduro bikes or whatever. This works.
This is a new,
better way of doing things.
Yeah, cool. And I mean, people will talk about downsides. So some people say, well, they don't climb or they're too long to get around tight stuff. What are your thoughts on that? Because from what you're saying, you've not really felt, you know, the compromise side of where you've gone with the geometry, right?
No. I mean, obviously, I haven't tested it absolutely everywhere, but I've tested it in quite a few places.
Yeah.
From a climbing point of view, I think they're better.
Right.
Because the whole hangover of a short rear end being better for climbing is from when bikes were tiny short.
Yeah.
So that was about keeping you in the middle of the bike when front ends were super, super short.
Yeah.
So if you make front ends really long,
yeah,
you need to grow the rear ends to balance you out back in the middle of the bike.
Yeah.
And again, actually sizing the space up properly for bigger riders means that you can run the saddle a little bit further. You know, I always used to run my saddle jammed all the way back. I now run it kind of in the middle of the rails. So that's effectively like a degree steeper on my seat, on my effective seat angle.
Yeah.
You know, the best climbing bike that I think we make for technical terrain is the Rocket Max, which is the 448 mil chainstay 29er enduro bike. You know, and I'm not talking about like chugging up a fire road or something like that. It'll be slower than a lightweight XC bike up there. I'm talking about scrambling up something really steep and difficult. That bike just sticks to the floor. And it motors up, and actually with plus wheels in it, they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, so it's so, so I don't buy the climbing thing at all.
Okay.
The length thing is interesting. Now, I've had a couple of people say, oh, what about really steep switchbacks going uphill?
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, for those kind of things, that's just a timing thing. Right. You need to swing her out, yeah. get around.
Yeah.
It just takes a bit of practice, but it's not impossible.
Uh-huh.
But actually going, I mean, I'm not ridden crazy alpine switchbacks where I know right. there can be a bit of a handful, but I remember, again, this was, it took me a long time to get the geometry working on the 29er, because I've been developing the Rocket Max version now.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, that took a lot longer to get right, it took me a while to figure out why, but the final prototype that I got of that was interesting, because I was over at Warncliffe. It was, I think we were right. Was I riding with you or was I riding?
Don't know.
I can't remember. We were over at Warncliffe and we were riding some of the clay spade stuff.
Yeah.
And we found some stuff which doesn't have massive jumps in it, which was good.
Probably was me then.
But it was, but at the top, there was some quite steep, like tight sculpted berms. And I remember, and I'd only had the bike about a week, and I didn't know this trail. And I remembered whipping round this berm.
Yeah.
And it just went round. And I think what it is it's the same thing that makes the climbing good is what makes the bike not feel too long when you're doing steep turns.
Uh-huh.
It's because if you think like a bike turns and there's a vertical axis there somewhere.
Yeah.
I think what happens with the long bike, if you've got the long back end to match and and because of the length, you're stood up in the middle of the bike instead of being pushed back off the, because that's the other thing is, you know, with enough length in the bike, you stand up in the middle instead of automatically pushing yourself off the bars because your legs and arms are fixed length kind of thing. Your center of gravity is roughly on the turning axis of the bike.
Uh-huh.
So when the bike turns, it does, you're kind of,
it moves around you,
you're like the pivot in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think that's why some of these bikes which have gone super long, well not even super long, but longer bikes but have kept the super short back end is why they feel a bit odd.
Right.
Because that's going to put that turning axis like in front of you.
Yeah.
So it's going to have that kind of
okay. yeah, yeah.
wheel, you know, that sort of shopping trolley. Yeah, yeah. Shopping trolley is a horrible way to, because they're not bad bikes.
It's like a barge at that point.
But you're trying
to move something from the back.
It's all in front of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that axis is in front of your center of gravity. So
okay.
So actually, even though, like with the 160 forks on it, I think like my Rocket Max prototype's got a 1350 wheelbase.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't fit in my bike bag anymore. It's just, it is very, very long.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel long to me.
It doesn't feel cumbersome on the trail.
So that's what I say about those two things.
Yeah.
And even if there are a couple of places where they're compromised compared to other bikes, I just think that the advantages for the vast majority of riding that people do are so marked. Like I say, that confidence that you feel is just amazing. It just makes you feel so secure on the bike, which means you have more fun because you're not terrified riding down these trails. And I mean, when I was riding at the Golfy last summer, I'd never ridden at the golf course trails up in Elethan where there's some crazy steep,
pretty steep up there,
stuff, but it's got this incredible traction in the dirt. Like the dirt's got kind of rock mixed in with it. So even when it's a bit sloppy, it's kind of, you're getting all of this feedback that you've got loads of grip.
Yeah.
So that gives you confidence. But I remember riding down, like my favorite trail up there now is one called Repeat Offender. And it's really steep and technical, but there's a couple of bits where you're coming in quite steep and there's a little, you can see like a route and then you can't see on the other side. And on my first run down it, I was almost rolling to a halt.
Right.
Until I could see what was coming.
Yeah.
And then you let go and you go.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel topply. It just felt secure. It just felt right. I'm completely in control of this. I've got this. I'm just going to slow it down. That's all right. And I'm going. It's confidence.
Yeah.
It just gives you so much confidence.
And do you think? I mean, you're quite a tall rider.
Yeah.
I'm not. Does it work for everyone? Everyone riding wise, you're saying, but everyone kind of height wise as well. Is it applicable across the size range?
Well, yeah. Well, this is the thing that I was always. This is the thing that I did a lot of work on after I'd had the kind of we need to do this for everything moment.
Yeah.
Well, the next thing we got made was a cut and shut prototype of our sole 27.5-inch hardtail.
Yeah.
Which is our kind of XC lightweight XC trail steel hardtail. Mm-hmm. And Paul, who works here, is 5'8" and is at the top end of the small size. Always, right. Always ridden the small. He rode a small sole with a 60mm stem. Absolutely fine. Now, we tried a couple of options.
Yeah.
And we tried a couple of things where he rode bigger sized current bikes with short stems to see.
Yeah.
Roughly, you know, we built him up like a large rocket with a 35mm stem. So even though the standover was no good, it was like lengthwise, he could like see what was going on. And what we ultimately came down to was for shorter people, we actually had our sizing about right.
Okay.
It was for taller guys like me, I'll definitely hold my hand up and say, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we were probably making bikes too short, or certainly not offering an XL size was not doing people my size a favor. But hand on heart, at the time, I was riding a production large with a 60mm stem and absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
So Chase, who races for me, has been for the last 3 years, rides a production large with a 50mm stem on it, absolutely loves it. You know, so it wasn't that I was mis-selling the bikes. It was just that where I was at the time, that's what I felt was appropriate. And through experimentation, I found something better.
Yeah.
What we wanted to do was see whether that was applicable to some of the shorter guys.
And
So what we found was that the previous generation small sizing with a 50 or 60 mil stem, that bar to BB distance was pretty much appropriate for people around, you know, sort of 5'6" to 5'8".
Yeah.
They didn't want or need any more space on the bike. But what we wanted to do was get them off that 50 or 60 mil stem and get a 35 mil stem in there. So we chopped the front end off an old sole and we had a new front end welded on, which was just, so instead of being, what is it? My long shot prototype was 60 mil longer than the bike I was previous riding.
Yeah.
This was just 25 mil longer.
Okay. Yeah.
So literally the difference between a 60 mil stem and a 35 mil stem, that's it. And again, we did the trick with the angle sets.
Yeah.
The interesting thing there is that's where we learned about how slack comes into this equation.
Okay.
And you don't necessarily find it on the enduro bikes because they're already pretty slack.
Yeah.
But again, we started with everything the same as current bike, except longer with a short stem.
Yeah.
And short stems, what they do is they give the steering more, they make the steering more responsive because they give you more leverage over the, over the steering.
Yeah.
So they make the steering more responsive. But the previous generation sole was obviously designed around 50, 60, 70 mil stems.
Yeah.
It had a 69 degree head angle at ride height.
Right.
And Paul persevered with it for a couple of months. And I don't know what you're going on with this short stem handle. This is my old bike's better. I can't stick this to the floor. This is no good. Oh, what's going on here then? This should be awesome. Like, what's... Okay, so, let's just see. We'll flip the angle set.
Yeah.
So went just at a stroke, 69 to 67 degree head angle.
Yeah.
And again, it was like It was one weekend. You know, we did it on the Thursday, came back in on the Monday. That's bloody brilliant. Absolutely. You know, so what we found was, and we went a little bit further again,
right,
which is what informed what we're doing with the beefy.
Yeah.
But ultimately for the soul, what we found was, is that 67 was the absolute steepest we could have it, uh-huh, with the 35 mil stem and not have the handling too nervous, because that's the other side of it.
Yeah.
35 mil stem gives you super responsive steering. So if you've also got a super responsive head angle, it just gets too much.
Yeah.
It's just too nervous.
Uh-huh.
So you lose that confidence all of a sudden. So what we did with the sole, because we still want that to be, you know, that's like the single track kind of scalpel kind of bike.
Yeah.
We settled with that 67 degree head angle for that hardtail, because,
right,
like I say, that was the steepest we could go.
Yeah.
And make the handling feel really good and get those benefits, but it's still super, super responsive.
Yeah,
bike.
Precise bike.
Yeah, so even though it's much longer than the previous version,
yeah,
certainly in the medium and large sizes, as the size steps grow, it's just so much more confidence. You've got that confidence inspiring stuff, but it's still got that little, you know, you can just, like, you know, from the wrists kind of thing.
Nice.
So yeah, that was interesting. Coming at it from completely the opposite end, we realised, oh, it is, you know, and this is where it starts working as a whole. You realise that it's all working as a system.
Yeah.
You've got to play the head angle off against the stem, against the length of the bike.
Yeah,
against...
nothing works on its own.
No.
Kind of without being, you know, linked to all the other variables, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what we ended up with is we've actually ended up with a broader sizing system. So yes, the small is longer than the previous generation small, but only far enough. But actually, like I say, if you measured the bar to BB distance of a conventionally set up previous generation bike and a new bike, it'll be within millimeters.
Right.
Whereas if you measure, you know, just taking the sole as an example, like the large, we don't make an XL in that particular size at the moment, but the previous generation large with a 70 mil stem and the new one with a 35 mil stem, it'll be probably, you know, it'll be the best part of, you know, 35, 40 mil longer.
Right.
And obviously the medium kind of falls somewhere in the middle
there
with, so the sizing steps are bigger.
So you've kind of, the range stretches more as you get towards the top end from where you were. Anyway,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, small is about the same.
Yeah.
Medium, if you're currently on a medium Kotick, we'd recommend you go to a new medium with a 35 mil stem, but you'll have a little bit more space.
Okay.
Large, you'll probably find quite a bit more roomy.
Yeah.
And then XL, you'll find quite a lot more roomy, but it will really suit you.
For that person. Yeah.
Yeah.
For that height rider. Okay.
And then what we've done with the rest of it is we've dropped the seat tube heights and jumps in seat tube between the sizes, so that if you do feel you want to go with something a little bit shorter or longer, you know, obviously it doesn't work at the extreme ends of the range, but if you're kind of in the middle with the range of like dropper seat post lengths that you can get now, you know, there's still a little bit of flexibility.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, they might be able to pick either a medium or a large kind of thing.
Yeah,
depending on how they feel
they want to.
Cool.
And obviously, like I say, we haven't ended up going crazy slack on these bikes. So they will still suit a more conventional approach.
Yeah.
If that's your thing, like I say, we think it's better with the 35 mil stems, and we absolutely hope you'll try it and love it.
Yeah.
But you know, if you just like the way bikes handle just a little bit more conventionally, then that's cool.
Yeah.
Just go down a size, stick a 45, 50 mil stem on it.
Away you go.
It's not going to be completely, you know, it's not suddenly going to make you fall off on every corner.
Yeah.
It will just respond a little bit more what you're used to.
Yeah. Cool, good stuff. So you guys have got a pretty novel approach to demo as well. If people want to get their hands on one and try this new geometry out, right?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about how they how they can go about that.
Yeah, so this was one of the reasons why I felt a bit more emboldened with the new geometry, because for the last 2 years we've had Sam the demo man out on tour in our big black Transit, Black Betty, and basically we take the demo to customers.
Right.
So we do open demos at places where we go around the country to forestry car parks and local trailheads and things like that, and you can either book a bike to at a certain time, or if you're just in the area, just pitch up and see what's available, and we'll try and fit you in. Or, and the other thing that we do is we do what we call exclusive rides. Mm-hmm. So if you and three or four of your mates or more, you know, if you've got a club, so much the better, want to try out the bikes on your local trails, get in touch and we will try and work that into our schedule. So we'll come out for half a day with you, you know, a couple of hours, you'll get set up on the bikes. You know, it normally takes us a couple of months to work these into the schedule, because obviously we're busy with
Pretty busy.
But yeah, that's so yeah, so we, so certainly in the UK we can, we, you know, if you want to have a go, get in touch and we'll try and sort it out. And obviously during the week, kind of, you know, we're based right in the middle of the Peak District, we've got a demo loop on our doorstep, so if you want to get in touch and you can get to, you know, get half a day off work on a on a Wednesday, you know, come down and have a go.
Sweet, good stuff. And for people that live outside the UK, you've got a website, you ship in worldwide now,
Is that right? Yeah, so we ship anywhere in the world, direct to the world from the Peak District.
Nice.
Most, you know, frames anywhere in the world. We're beginning to do bikes outside the UK, depending on the logistics and getting, the thing about shipping bikes around the place is that there's, you ship quite a lot of air with them, and they charge just as much for air as they do for anything else. So it can get a bit expensive, but we're willing to work with you. So yeah, there's lots of options like that. We do a, we do a 30 day, love it or send it back.
Okay, nice.
So if you buy it and you have a go and you ride it for a 2 or 3 weeks and you're just not getting on with it, send it back, give you your money back.
Unusual, but very cool.
Well, it's, we stand behind the product.
Yeah, it's good.
And obviously the thing about not being able to try it is it's not an insignificant amount of money, even if you're just buying a frame. And obviously distance selling from, you know, if you're in the US or if you're in, you know, if you're in, you know, Southeast Asia and you're buying a frame off us, you know, you can't, you know, you can't necessarily even have a chat to us because of time differences. Yeah. So we recognize it's a big commitment. So we want to back that up with being committed to our products.
Cool. It's good. I like it. And where can people find you on the internet?
So it's www.cotic.co.uk.
Yeah.
That's the website. And yeah, all the information's on there. As well, as much information as we can cram on it is on there.
Yeah.
If it's not on there, or if there's something you want to ask, just drop us an email, give us a ring.
Cool. And on social?
At Cotic Bikes on Instagram. Just search Cotic on Facebook. You'll find us. At Cotic LTD on Twitter.
Alrighty.
Yeah, you can tell I've not used that for a bit. Somebody monitors that.
Sure.
Yeah, we're about the place. We've got a flick, you know, there's loads of pretty pictures on our Flickr page. So
Nice one. Cool. Thanks a lot, Si. It's been super interesting.
Yeah, thanks.
And yeah, look forward to getting out for a ride on one of these things.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice one.
Cheers.
Cheers, man.
Alrighty, that's it for our episode with Si Turner. I really hope you enjoyed listening. We got loads of great stuff coming up, so make sure you subscribe so that you're the first to know when something new goes live. We've tried to make it as easy as possible. If you head to our website, downtimepodcast.com/subscribe, there should be all the buttons there that you need. Also, we've got a newsletter. You can subscribe on the same page, just scroll down a bit, fill your details in, and you'll get emails when new episodes go live, and also plenty of other Downtime Podcast related news. That's it for this episode, but until next time, get out and ride.